Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Flat Nickel Podcast. This week, we interviewed the Barons. We took a trip down to Charlottesville, Virginia, sat down in their living room, and we interviewed them about their music video that Hannah produced called American High. We interviewed them about the crazy antics that go on tour and what it's like trying to entertain the college crowd. To set the scene for you this week, you should know that this interview, like I said, took place in their living room. Hannah and I sat on one couch while three out of the four members of the Barons sat on the other. Some noises that may entertain you during this episode are fumbling with microphones, birds chirping outside of the house, and a roommate entering and exiting the house. With that said, let's start the interview.
Smoking, then having Apple Jacks and Bud Light Lime.
A good level of beginning.
Oh, just my life.
So we went... Policy.
That's a great hat.
Where'd you get that? I just got today to
Lowe.
Thrift store.
Yeah. Lowe, dude, I love Lowe.
We got here at like 3:30, I think.
Oh, that's great. No, Lowe is fucking my store.
Between this hat and a Jack Daniel's Lynchburg lemonade.
Yep, I've seen that hat there.
Yeah,
they have tons of hats now. They just like sit.
Yeah, it's
they're dope.
I should get my dad a hat.
What, Ball is Beautiful? Yeah. Ball is Beautiful. Well, it's a vintage clothing stores they don't have.
I'm sure a quick Google search and you can find something close to it.
I'm sure you can make one on like Vistaprint or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For Father's Day. You'd love that.
Bald is beautiful. It's great, even though you're not bald.
It's the irony of it.
It's just a positive message to put out into the world. Oh, God. Do you guys get hit with that label?
What label?
The hipster thing.
Hipster?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I think it's like, I think we're in like post-hipster society.
Yeah. Still hear, maybe it's because we're from a smaller area.
Well, yeah. I think that like hipsters, like, I don't think, it's kind of like nerd, right? Like, does anybody use nerd anymore? Not really.
No.
Same, so I think the hipster goes like with the same like sort of like caliber. I think hipster is sort of like a... Yeah.
No, it's over.
In my like, experience, people use hipster less like because of what the lifestyle was and more if you don't know the band, then they're just a hipster. It could be a super, if somebody doesn't know who Pearl Jam is, just for a random example, you're a hipster just because I don't know who Pearl Jam is, so I deem you a hipster because of that. That's how it's been used a lot with with me, is that you just use it as a replacement for, you know, nerd or, you know, if you're confused and if you don't know what the other person's talking about, then you just label them a hipster.
The last time someone called me a hipster, it was like an old chick. It was like a chick that I was got with, but she was like older. And so she was like 20, so I think she was like 28, 29. She was like, you're such a hipster. Like, you're such a little hipster. And I was like, when's the last person? Yeah, what are you talking about? Like, what? I was like, not even, yeah, it was like after a show. And I'm like, you're such a little hipster. I was like, what? Is that even, that's a thing? I didn't know that was a thing anymore. But I guess since she was older, she was like, that's a thing. I don't know. I don't tend to say anything.
I haven't heard that much, honestly.
You haven't been called that much because you like Nickelback.
Daggone right, I like Nickelback.
Well, that's on the record, so.
Yeah, let's try to cut that out.
Yeah,
are we okay with that being on the record?
Oh, is it recording? It?
Oh, yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, no, you should care.
I've listened
You're
to
hipster. Fair enough.
You like Nickelback. Oh, thanks. Thanks, dude. Who's the first one to call me that?
Ask away. What do you want to know?
Well, we've never met. This is our first time meeting. I'm Michael's daughter, if that wasn't put together.
I kind of figured that. So, like, Flat Nickel Touring was on his jacket. You remember? Like, it said Flat Nickel Touring. So that, like,
that's
their whole,
company.
Like, thing is Flat Nickel Management. And then they do, like, different things underneath of it. And so that was, like, the music video that they did for us. The, like, all sorts of shit.
Which is killer.
If you absolutely want to start on the music video, was it... Your decision, or was it yours, Hannah, about going with the professional wrestling direction?
It was mine.
I had nothing to do. I wanted it on the record that I did not come up with that concept. I was skeptical as hell.
Yeah, you were.
But
yeah.
Peyton's like, I want to like make it some sort of professional wrestling. And for some reason, you were talking about wrestling, and I thought you meant boxing. So the entire time I was researching it, I was looking up boxing.
Yeah, well, like, I had been like into like 80s retro like NWA and WWF videos. And like the charisma and the confidence that those guys had, I was like, that applies perfectly for this song. Ooh. And like, who doesn't want to like be like wrestling around in a ring for a video? Because I think that's just like dope in general. And then my buddy Chris, he like runs the local radio station. He's like 6'6", something like that. Like when we were at the video shoot, and he's just like massive, just slamming me on the ground. Listen, what better way to show like a guy that's like super confident in himself get kind of like destroyed at the same time in a quirky, fun way.
Is that a thing that comes up with you guys often? Is like as you're writing a song, you kind of already get a picture for the video too.
Like I get a like for me, I get like a visual. Mm-hmm. Like I get a visual like aiming for like that like a certain style or a certain aesthetic that I want to appeal to.
I think once it's all done, recorded, and we're all together listening to like the first like rough mix of it, it's kind of like we all kind of come together and think of something to do with it. Mm-hmm. Usually everything, I mean, it was pretty on the spot and it came out great, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't American High also kind of a follow-up to Marianne?
Yeah, so like, so Marianne was essentially, and this relates sort of to my character too, like in life, is like Marianne's sort of this not so confident, sort of like late teenager, and like sort of shows him like viewing a like girl or like a concept that's conformed with everybody else, but at the same time that concept or that girl is really different and just like he is. And so that's a very like surface level like explanation, but then American High sort of like it like flips on its head, and he's like the confident one, like he's the one that's like, hey, look, I'm confident in myself now. I don't care what other people think. I don't care what other guys think, sort of thing. And so he's like sort of on top at this point. And but the American High is like response to also goes to show you that like overconfidence can also like kill you and like who you actually are as well. So that like sort of falsehood of having like too much confidence. So I think that was like the response to Marianne. It was like Marianne, it was like this guy could easily make a move, but then he kind of went too far with American High. And so now he's kind of like grounded. He has had to like ground himself. So I think that's kind of where it goes.
When you're writing songs, are you conscious of the fact that you're writing a bop? Like you're writing...
Yeah.
You're making that effort to make it.
Because, like a pop song?
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think with one of the... differences that I've discovered about songwriting for like more alternative rock and roll music is there is that effort of like how it's going to be marketed and what is on brand.
I don't think that I necessarily am like trying to appeal to a certain crowd or like a certain audience. I think I'm trying to like connect obviously with anybody I think will be listening to it, but like I don't think that I'm trying to appeal to someone. But at the same time, like you said before, I definitely have like some sort of visual that I'm going after, and when I'm writing lyrics or like we're coming up with a song together, I think we all share some sort of vision for that song being played on the radio, not something that's going to be like we want people to hear it at the end of the day. You know, we want to write a pop song, like I'm not ashamed of that. Like I don't, and I think we're in, like also like in a post sort of like pop culture too in some ways, because like alternative music's taking over in a lot of ways, taking over pop radio, so you have less of your like 10 writers sitting in a room writing for someone, and now it's more so like it's honest. I think that comes with social media too, like people can see, all of a sudden you can look up an artist and be like, oh, that's what they're doing today on Instagram. And I think like that means that more people are going to be listening to radio for that person's honest perspective on their life instead of like who's writing for them, unless you listen to country music. New country music. It's just like 10 writers sitting in a room coming up with a song for someone else, and they're writing it for someone else. So I think with like technology and stuff like that, I think that that's a big reason why people want to hear it directly from the artist. And that's where alternative sort of like takes over the pop scene. Like you have great pop songs now. Like 1975 is like an amazing pop band. Like they're one of the best bands out there right now. But they came from like the alternative circuit. And I mean, even like someone like Justin Bieber, like people will hate on him, like tons of people, like back then, like tons of people wrote songs for him, but at the same time, like he's alternative and pop and writes his own stuff, and you gotta respect that. And I think he does a very good job and a very creative job doing so.
When you mentioned it sort of being this generation of music is kind of becoming more honest and more relatable, and it's more like one person's direct heart on paper rather than what's going to sell in a conference room.
Yeah.
Do you, when you guys are like crafting your image, because I feel when I see your social media stuff, it's very much what I associate with your brand. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's very much that sort of edgy, fun, like style. are you guys consciously crafting a brand or a look at, or streamlining things on social media?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that's a part of like being an artist, like how you paint yourself, like how you paint your picture. And like, we definitely have a brand in that aspect, like of how we paint the band and how we paint our songs and how like the way that we come across live, for sure, is definitely like a perception of our art.
How do you do that and still feel, not feel, this sounds negative, but still feel genuine? Because for me, my mother's always like, your brand, your brand, your brand. But I don't know how to sort of craft that image while still feeling like myself, because I feel like that changes constantly.
Yeah. So like, I would say like, you have like, on one aspect of things, you have like art, right? Like art that you create, that you feel something from, that moves you in a specific way. And then brand, you're saying like, you see art and brand are hard to combine like a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, that is that essentially where you're going for? Like, brand is separate than art? Or are you saying like...
No, I think just like my... who I am as a person, it's hard for me
to like wrap your head around combining the two sometimes.
The concept of me being a brand, or like something being, people being a brand, for me is hard to wrap my head around. And so I think you guys are really great with everything on your social media looks consistent. The way that you perform live is consistent. It seems like you guys, and it seems like who you are as people. Yeah.
I think it's because like the branding is a part of like who we are as like an artist. Like, it's, like, intertwined. Like, it goes back and forth. It's, like, that's our representation. That's our look. That's our brand. That's our art. That's the way that we come across. It's kind of like, you know that, like, when Prince would walk out on stage, like, he's going to be playing, like, that purple guitar. Like, that's his signature. Mm-hmm. That's his look. That's his brand. Like, that's his art. That's what he likes. That's what he wants, you know? So, I think it's the same thing with us. It's, like, when we do different social media, like, you know, posts or whatever it is, I think we, you know, want to come across in a way that represents who we are. And that's, like, our brand and art at the same time. So,
I do want to talk a little bit more about the making of American High and the music video, because I realized we didn't film any behind the scenes stuff for that, really.
Nothing. That'd be great.
I know, we should have, because it was such a, first of all, it was a crazy experience trying to schedule a location.
Yeah. And Beau was all a part of it.
Yeah. I feel like
you got it all.
I walked past Charlottesville Parks and Rec today, by the way.
Oh, man.
And I was, like, grumpy about it. But we got really lucky with Strong Style Pro.
Oh, yeah.
And that was incredible.
Really cool place.
My
dad actually filmed it.
I know. I thought that was really cool. I do want to check up and see if that guitar that was smashed and we all signed is actually hanging up in their studio.
That was great. Michael just, like, came back around and then, like, drove right up with, like, a brand new guitar and was like, I just smashed this.
And it's like, let's go find a cheap guitar that we can break, because that...
That was great.
Why not?
And he smashed it on the first try, too.
Yeah, the fact...
See, I thought he was going to pick up an acoustic, so it'd bust in, like, all different ways. And honestly, he picked up that electric. That thing was the body was actually really heavy. And so when he went to snap it, like, he hit it up against the pole, like, on the ring. And, like, the Chris Gallagher, my friend, the one that played, like, the villain sort of dude. And so when he goes up there, he like goes to smash it. Instead of the like actual guitar smashing like the body, it just breaks off from the neck. So the whole like the whole body of the guitar is still attached.
Yeah.
And the strings hanging off and everything. But I think they have it hanging up now.
It looks so cool. Like,
it looks really cool.
I think we signed one of the posters that you, the poster you had made.
Oh, the poster,
for
yeah,
in the
for
video.
The, yeah.
And I have the...
That's wild.
Yeah. I have the tiara from your costume in my room.
That's amazing.
It's my emergency tiara.
Now, what we need to do is we need to do American High remix video.
Yes.
Where it's, since we're coming out with the remix, hopefully it'll be like an album in the next couple weeks. But I was gonna say we should definitely do like a American High remix video and just have it like completely reversed.
Yes.
Then you can be wrestling.
Oh, gosh. Did you, at the very end, when the wig was like in the center of the ring, I had to like climb up and try and get it.
And you couldn't get in the ring?
One, I couldn't get in the ring. I was terrified of being
like
that high up. And Joe's like trying to help me down. And I'm no, I'm a big girl. I can do it. I can do it. I'm actually terrified, but I can do it. But I don't know what I would do if I got stuck in the ring. But you actually got hit.
Yeah. Like for like that, we did that for like what, like half an hour of just practicing beforehand?
Just practicing.
And because the dudes that were there like wanted to like make it as professional as possible. That sounds weird. Professional, like, wrestling. But at the same time, you still fall. Like,
I'm a fan, so I understand
the... Yeah, I was like, you still fall. Like, the hits and stuff, like, can be fake. Mm-hmm. But, like, actually falling and getting slammed and stuff like that was not fun. And they were, like, Boone and Joe were, like...
It was funny for, like, the first hour of you guys doing it. And then when you guys had to keep redoing shots, that's when I started to feel really bad for both of you.
No, that was awful. I was like, no.
How sore were you the next morning?
I was sore the next morning and the next day. I had the flu that, or I was just getting over the flu that day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Joe had it.
Joe had a stomach bug, like the next 2 days after that, next day or something. And I was worried I was going to get sick because I have like OCD about stomach bugs, so I didn't want to get sick.
We got sick after that shoot too.
Bug or like flu?
I don't know.
Something weird.
But, like, it seemed like everybody got sick right in quick succession of each other after that video
Strong
shoot.
Strong Style Pro just... It's too sick for us.
Eh.
Maybe they didn't clean it well enough.
I was thinking more of, like, sick as in a good thing.
Ah, it could be both. Well, I was going to say, though, like, the ring itself was made in, like, the late 70s.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
It was an official NWA ring, so it was, like... Ric Flair's wrestled on it. Like, tons of people have, like, wrestled on it. It was from Charlotte, North Carolina, the ring that we used.
It was...
Was it super sketchy when we pulled up?
Like, oh, it was... Well,
it was, like, on the back. It's, like, the... Okay, you've never seen... Have you seen the video, but, like, you've never seen, like, the building or anything like that? Like, she's never
seen... Yeah, no, I've never actually seen
so
where
it's like,
filmed.
It's this random building in, like, Lynchburg. Like, the sketchy part of Lynchburg. And it's on the back... of a loan building.
Like a Quicken
Loans. A Quicken Loans type building. And then it's like attached to it. And it's just like a garage essentially that has a wrestling ring in it.
Of a lot of wrestling, like their warehouses basically.
Yeah, it's like, it was kind of, it was like a warehouse. Mm. But it was just a part of a Quicken Loans building, which was very strange.
But it was really cool once we got in there.
We walked
in and they had, you know, sort of this enclosed space where they keep all their costumes and their lights and everything. And then the ring. And
I also liked how amateur it was, too. Like, it was, like, a wrestling ring, but it wasn't, like, a big, showy, like, stadium, like, wrestling ring. It was, like, super, like, this sounds hipster of me, but I'm just saying, it's, like, super underground.
That's what we
and, like, that
wanted.
Sort of vibe. Smoky, lights going everywhere to make up for the lack of a stadium or the lack of, like, a huge, like, you know.
They were crazy accommodating, too. Like, I think when we were looking at other places to film, we were finding, like, little tiny baby sparring rings.
Oh, yeah.
That wouldn't have worked for the video.
They'd have been, like, half the size, and we would have had to, like...
It would have been so much more work. But, yeah, no, we got really lucky. How's that coat doing?
Coat's great. Yeah, I love that coat. I love that coat. I will actually... I wear it around the house, and then when people come over and stuff like that, they come over and they'll put it on. Like, I live downstairs, so, like, it gets really cold, so sometimes I'll just throw it on after I get out of bed.
Like a robe?
That's
your robe?
I put it on.
Everybody that comes over has to put it on.
I gotta try.
It's like a thing.
It's iconic,
yeah. So when people come over for parties or different stuff like that, like, all of a sudden I'll walk in, and I'll be like, I'm just sitting over there wearing my coat. Like, saw, like, yeah, this girl was just, like, randomly sitting on this thing the other day, and I walk in and the coat was sitting on that chair, so I guess she just thought she could just put it on, so she just put it on and was sitting in that chair, like, hey, how's it going? I was like, it's my coat, what are you doing with it? She's like, yeah, it was cold, so I'm weird.
That's how I used to hit on guys. Have you seen my, like, big white fluffy coat that I have? I have this big white fluffy coat, and I'd wear it to gigs and stuff, and guys would always come up and be like, oh my god, that coat is so awesome.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, thanks, you want to try it on?
Yeah.
That's how I would hit on guys.
Yeah,
be like, getting guys
it.
Into my coat.
No, that's seriously the way they do it now.
With fluffy coats.
So you're a relatively new addition.
Boone, Beau.
I've heard great things.
I forgot girl's name.
I've not seen you play live yet, but I've heard great things.
Oh,
how did you get involved in this?
I got involved because Ryan and I were in a band.
Don't call me Ryan.
Boone and I were in a band beforehand, and he had left our band and joined this band. And then when Kurt had left or / quit, they needed somebody to fill in. So I actually hadn't played bass a whole lot, but I knew how to just because I played guitar. And it was just an opportunity that I couldn't pass down. So my former band kind of gave me an ultimatum and told me, you know, if I join them, then they don't really want me to be in that band anymore. So I just went on tour with them, and it's been great ever since.
Even though we make fun of you all the time.
Yeah, they give me so a hard back. Time. Because I'm the new guy.
Yeah.
I knew that it was I knew that was going to come.
So. I think the best thing that I liked about Bo, so we met at a diner, like,
scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
It was so serious.
I was like, January, we met, yeah, we met at a diner, and, like, I, like, walk in, I have, like, my hat down low, and, like,
he was so serious the whole time.
And, yeah, and Bo was, like, super scared, and I told Boone to, like, get Bo to meet up with us, and so we just pretty much met, and he was
I didn't know you were coming.
You thought it was just
no, he was like, let me pick your brain on something, so then I met him, and he's like, oh, there's gonna be three people, and I was like, oh, man, Peyton's gonna be here. And so Peyton rolls up, and I was, like, nervous as all get out, but...
We come in there... Yeah, I started talking and stuff and questioning about the band. I think the number one thing that I was going to say about Bo that was, like, really appealing is he's, like, very passionate about music in general, regardless of, like, what instrument he's playing, like, whatever he's doing, is, like, he's willing to give it everything he has to make it work and make it work for the band. And he's, like, the ultimate team player in that aspect. Him and Boone are both, like, ultimate team players. Like, when I grew up playing sports, like, I think that's what really helped me, like, throughout this band and throughout branding and throughout art and everything like that is sports, which people don't usually associate sports with art or, like, whatever else. But it's, like, when I was growing up playing football and baseball and everything like that, you get to see, like, who really were the players that lasted, like, who were the players that really were a part of the team and wanted to keep it going. And so, like, I had that sort of experience, and coming from, like, a coach's son, that's what I saw. So with these two guys, they were just, like, complete team players. Like, they were just jumping in, ready to get it going, passionate about it, and, like, any sort of business, any sort of, you know, brand, like, you want everyone to be passionately involved in that, and you want everybody going full at it. It doesn't, I mean, at that point, you know, talent doesn't really matter as much. It's more so about wanting to achieve the brand and the art.
I do think it gets lost with music, especially, that work ethic is actually a huge part.
Oh, it's, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people probably get into music thinking it's just a party and that there is no, you know, no. work to it, but
I mean, our shows are always a party.
That there's of
but,
course the,
but
that
the whole concept the yeah. whole concept is definitely not, you know, about a party, but
if you want to do it as a hobby, then you can party.
That's the thing, like, you can,
if you want to make it here, you have to
put yeah and you it. Can you can create art, and you can create amazing art that never gets displayed to the world. You could be the best guitar player in the world and no one could ever know about you, and that's probably the case right now. But, like, that's not what we're about. You know, we're about our brand, we're about our art, we're about how we connect with other people, and that's what matters to us. So I think that with these two dudes, when Boone joined the band and when Bo joined the band, is that they both were like, hey, like, let's do it for the team. Let's
and
do it for the brand.
We both already played together in the first place, so it was easy for me to transition
and lock him
into
Boone
this band.
When they played the old group together.
You know, having that rhythm section down already was great.
Yeah.
Had you heard stories about Peyton? Is that why you were
no,
nervous?
I didn't know what the conversation was going to be about in the first place, because Boone didn't give me any hints or anything. He just was like, you know,
hey man, let's meet up.
You weren't scared of me already?
No, I was more like really nervous just because I didn't know the situation. And then when he rolled in, you know, he was very serious, very goal oriented, and hey, this is how it is. Are you committed to this? And it put me on the spot because I was, you know, concerned about it for a while. I'm a very loyal person, and I had been with Max in my former band since like sophomore year in high school, so it was just hard for me to do that. But then I had to do it for myself, and, you know, thought that this was a better opportunity, and I've not regretted it a single bit. So
we offered him more money.
No money.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, but it goes to the right cause. Like, if we all split money all the time, then
yeah, there's
there
no
be
point.
No success.
Yeah, and, I mean, we know, just essentially all. We just pay for ourselves to live and go. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. I mean, we just put everything into like our music, and that's what's important for building our brand right now.
Yep.
I think we talked a little bit about the energy that you guys have when you perform, and sort of the. Not persona that you guys have when you perform, but you guys are definitely the type of band that people want to sit and watch.
Right.
They want to be involved with. They want to. It's very much the screaming, dancing, fun show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you guys do to get that pumped? Like, are you doing push-ups before you get on stage? Are you...
Lines of cocaine. Tons and tons of mounds of it. I don't know. You answer that though. What do you do? What do you do to prep before you get on stage, Bell?
I watched them play at the Southern before I ever joined the band, and it was just intriguing. They did nothing that was like crazy extravagant. It's just I could not keep my eyes off of them. I just think that the energy that they have and like not going over the top with anything just made it seem so real. So when I joined, I just felt like everything was so real on stage, and when you can see that honesty and realness, I think that just connects with an audience.
I never up on stage and like fake dancing or fake anything I do. So whatever comes out is naturally coming out of me. Like, it's not like I don't try to put on a show. I just try to connect with the audience the best I can.
And there doesn't need to be a lot of talking for that at all.
Mm-hmm. We all just kind of feed off of each other on stage. So
I think the biggest thing that artists do with live that they don't do very well is they don't connect with their audience and they connect with themselves too much. They put on a show for themselves. And I feel like the only way that I'm going to be able to perform the right way is if the audience is engaged and I can connect with the audience in that sense. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm feeling like the right vibes from the audience and connecting in that way. And like, the goal of our show is like for everybody to connect with the band, obviously. That should be everybody's goal. But it's to make everybody happy. Like, why? Like, if I'm going to get, why else would you come out to a show? Like, I don't want to go out to a show, sit down and be sad the whole time. Like, that's great that it hits that emotional nerve, but like my personality, our personality, like we want to play a show and we want people to be happy. Like, come out on a Friday night to a show and be happy, you know? Why not? There's no reason that you should be performing if you're not satisfied with it like that.
You guys play a lot of the college circuit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How did you guys get into playing college shows and colleges?
It's like all around. We were like playing college shows through like an agency. Like, an agency was like booking different colleges for us because we really hit that market. Now we have another agency that books colleges for us. And then on top of that, we play a bunch of clubs that are near colleges. So you have a lot of students that come out. So we've had, you know, whether it's from booking from people that, you know, have seen our shows at clubs that want us at their colleges, or word of mouth, or the agencies that are like connecting with these colleges that are like, hey, this band would be great for this particular college or this particular event or whatever it is.
Just a lot of different outlets all over the place.
That's where the management, like, that's where like I in some way like manage it myself, or like manage it ourselves, in the sense of like there have been people in like management groups that like want to like work with us and like want to like manage us or like want to sign something like a label, like whatever it is, a lot of boutique labels. But at the end of the day, it's sort of like I've sort of picked and choosed and been like, let's use this person as a tool, let's use this as a tool, let's use this as a tool. And I'm a huge Chance the Rapper fan, and so like I've watched like a bunch of documentaries about him, and I just love how like how independent he was, but how many like different tools that he used to get to the top without actually having to be locked into one thing. And he was able to use different aspects of the industry to be where he is now. So I think that was like, that really inspired me to be like, okay, we got to be, you know, independent for as long as possible and use these connections the best we can. And then that way we're happy with our brand. We're happy with our art. Nobody owns us. We're who we are. We're honest. That's the direction we want to go. You know,
you have more freedom that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned, and I just pick it up, you mentioned staying independent as long as you can. Do you see a point when you have to sort of pull the trigger and sign with somebody and, you know, become a part of a label? Just because, I mean, Chance the Rapper is sort of an exception to the rule, you know?
Yeah.
He managed to headline a, you know, Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
But especially with you guys being, you know, in the more alternative space, Chance the Rapper being a rapper, he's
way different.
He's in the top 40, you know?
Yeah.
So do you kind of see there being a point when you guys have to maybe go to the label?
Yeah, like, I'm not anti-label. Like, I'm not like, right. We're never going to sign with a label or something. It would just have to be the right deal where we can still have our independence and our freedom and our like art that sounds like super whatever, like patriotic, I guess. No, not really. But just so that we can like sort of manage our brand and our art the way that we want to, and as long as the label satisfied with that. I just think there's like too many artists out there, like their songs are just getting written for them, or like they're going into the industry or going into a label signing 360 deals, and then they're just getting screwed over a bunch of money, and that just doesn't really help.
Or they jump the gun and they take the first offer that's given because they want to be part of.
I mean, granted, if RCA put a contract right in front of my face right now and was like, hey, like sign with us and XYZ, if it appealed to me and appealed to all of us, I think all of us would be like, yep, we're jumping on board. Let's do it. But I think it would have to be the right deal. Yeah, for sure. I don't think it could be a standard deal. I think it would have to be something that's like altered. But at the same time, it's kind of like labels and artists are kind of like high school relationships. Like,
yeah.
Or middle school, high school relationships where like, you have the label that's sort of like the girl, and the guy has to play hard to get for the girl in order to go after him in some ways. And that's, I feel like, how it works in high school, sort of. So I feel like the label right now is sort of like that beautiful girl that's like absolutely like that RCA, that Columbia Records, like that beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. And we're sort of like the, like, I don't know, I don't think we're that ugly, but like we're sort of like the ugly dudes that are just kind of like chilling around, like waiting our turn till we get there. But that girl's not going to like us until we actually like prove ourselves a little bit more as an independent artist. And then that way, when we get to like our peak of independent like artistry, then that's when the label would be like, oh man, they've influenced so many people with their brand, influenced so many people with their art. We gotta sign them, you know. So we're not begging for anybody's, you know.
Those tools that you're using, those like sort of one-off agencies and the bookers that sometimes you work through. Are those people reaching out to you? Are they seeing you and being like, hey, I probably have an opportunity for you? Or are you seeking them now? They're just reaching out to you.
No. All the agencies, I've seen connections like in the industry, like different artists to open for, different agents to contact, stuff like that. But these agencies specifically reached out first. So,
have you ever had anything like that that's been scammy?
Scammy?
Like just
all the time. Agencies, management groups, like all that, like, I would say 75-80% of the time, people that reach out to you like that are scammy.
I've known people where like they would book a show and not tell, take the deposit and not tell the artist that they had a show. They'd just start skimming deposits.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you have people all around that are just trying to make a buck. Like, I remember there was a label that contacted us out of Arizona. There was like a California management group. There was a New York City management group, and like all of them were like, oh yeah, we want to manage you, we want to do whatever. And then you like look into it, you talk to them, and you're like, this is essentially a scam.
Yeah,
like, it's not, I'm not putting out my money for this sort of thing. Whereas like Big Machine Records reached out to us, which is like a huge deal for us, because like Big Machine's like Taylor Swift and all that stuff. They didn't want to sign us, but they wanted to work out like a deal, like sort of like grandfather us into their label sort of thing. But at the same time, I still have the attitude of being like, no, we're not going to put out X amount of money to you, or like, we're not going to do this, like, because you guys are like a big label, like, we don't want to be controlled by it, unless you guys are on offers, like a really like solid contract that we know that we're going to be safe under, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. I would say like 75-80% of management groups that reach out are definitely like scammy. I think that's with any like artist though, in general. There's plenty of people that want to make a buck.
Have you guys... Well, no, I know the answer to this question. You guys have definitely had probably crazy show experiences. Yeah. Outside of, like, the... Like, you've opened for some really cool people.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you want to shout those names out?
Yeah. Like, Jude and the Lion and Catfish and the Bottleman School. And the Wigs were really cool because they're out of Nashville and they're really close with Kings of Leon. We all love Kings of Leon. And they, like, a couple of their members play with Kings of Leon sometimes, so that was really cool. And, who else have we done? Barnes, Courtney is really cool. He's a big alternative artist guy. Yeah. The Aces are a newer group, but they were really cool to open up for.
Yeah, I saw the Aces up in Brooklyn.
Really?
They work with the Syndicate.
Oh.
The group that I interned for over the summer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I saw them at the Mercury Lounge. Yeah, okay. They played the Mercury.
Was it a headlining show?
It was just them. I think it was album release, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, their show was like a headline show when we opened up for them.
Aces are a rocking group of chicks. They're awesome.
They are. For how young they are, too. They're, mm-hmm. you know, around our age. But they, like, they kill it. They opened up for Ex-Ambassadors, too, mm-hmm. recently. They just got off tour with them. Anyway, so yeah, the Aces is another, like, the last group that we opened for that's, like, in that alternative top 40 type circuit.
But aside from, like, those... which obviously are cool experiences. Have you guys had, what are the sort of like craziest
stories about a show? Or like craziest stories that's happened before or after a show?
I mean, I'm gonna guess
the craziest stories you probably don't want.
I'm gonna guess that we shouldn't say what's happened before and after shows, just because I've heard some stories. Yeah, particularly from Boone.
Oh yeah, move the mic over to Boone.
Balls of Beach, right?
Good talk.
All right,
that's it.
That's a wrap.
Well, you guys played the college circuit, so are you guys just doing venues in college towns, or has like a front house ever reached out to both?
We've played like the, you know, anywhere from Greek Life to the actual college itself, like for the college's events. It's a mix. It's sort of like a mix between both of them. And then clubs near colleges too, so we kind of like... Basements. Oh, yeah, we did play, like, we played at Wake Forest, and it was, like, huge, like, fraternity house. They were doing their end-of-the-year bash, like, it was huge. That place was giant. It's like a mansion. Yeah, but anyway, so, like, those are the type of, like, we don't play, like, we don't go in, like, some, like, run, well, their basement was, like, somewhat run down. But, like, it was nice. And they, like, they have, like, tons of money, too, so that's the thing. But it's a great way to, like, meet new fans. That way, like... good example is like you go there and you can play to like, we'll play like 500 people, like packed in a place, or like 200, 300, whatever people, but they've never heard of us before. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're like, they're completely new fans. They see you for the first time that night. So they haven't like, they've looked us up, like heard some of our songs and stuff like that. But that's a good way of just building like, how do you get 300, 400 new fans in one place all at once that are all college students that haven't heard about you before? Like, that's sort of the way to do it, you know? Regardless, I don't care if it's a, you know, college campus or if it's a club or if it's a whatever. If you have new fans there that you want to connect with that haven't seen your live show before or have maybe once or twice, I'm totally down, you know?
Is that demographic buying merch too?
Huh?
Is that demographic buying merch too?
Yeah, they buy it like a little bit. Not crazy, no. I mean, like, you know, some things here and there, but nothing crazy. I mean, I will say, like, the club shows definitely people buy more merch. But on college campuses, I mean, it's sort of 50-50. It depends, you know.
You guys only use digital download cards, right?
Yeah, we don't have CDs anymore, yeah. Yeah, I don't think CDs are, like, dead, but, like...
They're on their way.
They're on their way there.
Is that weird for you? Because CDs, I agree, CDs are going down the tube eventually, but vinyl's making a comeback, you know? Yeah. So it's like, how, when it comes to marketing your actual physical music, like, what direction do you see that going in? Are you going to stick with digital download cards, or eventually do you want to transition into vinyl as well? It's because it's...
Yeah, like, I mean...
It's weird having to pick and choose how you want to distribute it.
I think phone is necessity, vinyl is luxury. I think, like, someone getting luxury, if they want, like... You know, like, if you, it's the same, like, first class or coach. Like, you go in, if you want vinyl, it's sort of like your first class approach to the band. You get to hear the band in a new light. Like, you get to see the artwork. You get to have, like, a piece of the band that you didn't before. It's something physical that people want. It's sort of that luxury aspect about going to a show. But not everybody's going to buy that. Like, not everybody's going to want that sort of, like, you know, luxury item. I think it's more so, like, if we had, someone putting out the vinyl for us and like selling the vinyl and keeping it reoccurring, it'd be a little bit different. But I think right now it's just like phone and, you know, MacBook is like, that's it. Like people, like the majority of people in our fan base too, are just going to be boom on the phone, looking up whatever, instead of, you know, vinyl. I think vinyl's making a comeback. I just think it's more of a collector's type thing. You're not going to have vinyl in a car, really. You're not gonna have vinyl like while you're traveling, you know. People can have, you know, that sort of stuff, but I don't think that it's I think it's cool to have. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, it's the best way to listen to music, I think. But other than that, you know, as far as if you want to talk about the marketing aspect of things, that's what I'm talking about. Like, as far as, like, this is still king, you know. So I mean, you gotta admit, like, in today's society, it is.
Everybody's on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody. Well, yeah, and I'm not saying, like, I necessarily, like, I'm guilty of it too. Like, I'm all over my phone all the time. But at the same time, you're trying to reach a fan base that, you know, is already doing something. And so that way you have to reach out to them in that light. Like if you... I'm trying to think of, like, a good analogy for this, but I can't. It's like if you're... Yeah, if you're, like, selling, like, popcorn... Why would you sell, like, popcorn away from the... I mean, you could sell it at the movies, but, like, you're going to sell it at the movies. Most of the time, that's, like, going to be the market for it. Everybody goes to the movies to get popcorn for the most part. That's where most, like, sales would be. So, same thing with, like, music and somebody's phone. It's the same aspect. You're playing music. Putting it on someone's phone is, like, that's the most natural place for it to go right now. And it's weird to say that because it's, like, organically growing that way, but it's organically growing in a way that's not so much organic. Like, vinyl would be seen as organic, natural, like, raw. Mm. Phones are not seen that way. Computers aren't seen that way. Technology's not seen that way. But, like, now it's becoming, like, it is organic. Like, that is, like, the natural thing to do. So, more people are just going to be downloading it that way and listening to music that way on their crappy iPhone speakers.
Speaking of, like, cultural shifts and all that, and I correct me if I'm wrong here, but an opinion that I kind of hold is that music is moving more towards... or back towards singles as opposed to albums. The single today is valued more than the whole album, whereas, like,
for sure.
80s and 90s, I think, was when the album meant more than the single.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, do you guys... But
see, people have hissy fits over that, too, because people be like, oh, like, you're not a real band unless you put in an album. And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to put in an album, but, you know, hook me up with 50 grand and I'll put out an album. I'll spend the time writing for you, you know? Like, people like, throw hissy fits, like, oh, like, you're not, like, writing a full album. Like, you're not, like, what are you, like... And it's like... Dude, like, singles are where it's at right now. Like,
the majority of people aren't, like, going to sit down and listen to a whole album anymore.
No, and I love, I love to, and I think that there's a beautiful thing about an album, but at the same time, it's like, if you want to display your art in the best way right now in society, it's, you know, through a single. And I think that's a great way for
especially
us to do it.
Especially for someone who doesn't know
who you are.
To get out there.
Singles. Yeah, for sure. I think in what you see now is what all artists, well, artists with major labels, what they're doing now is they're putting out single, they're putting out four or five singles before the album even drops. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, they have half the album out already, and then the album drops, and the only reason that they're making so much money is because they heard those four or five songs, and they're buying the whole album, and then, like, that's the way of making money. I have a very strong opinion. I think that people don't, really stream the whole album a lot, like, but, like, those vinyl collectors and stuff, those are the people that are going to go out and buy that whole album. Yeah, the hipsters. As we were just saying, that term's, like, out to hit. It's like, yeah, I think that's, like, sort of the case. I think you just, the album's, it's, like, provided to a niche market right now, and it's kind of, like, the way it goes. And I fall in the line of being, like, I want to make an album. I'm nothing against, like, albums at all. Like, I don't think that I'm saying that album is just a collection of songs, because it's not. I think that's why I wanted to sit down and, like, write a full album in that way. Like, it's all one piece of art instead of, like, collecting different singles. I think that's a very big label thing to do, is collecting different singles, then putting them together on an album and then being like, oh, this is our album.
Do you think that the transition to, or, like, the trend of the single right now puts more pressure on keeping your sound the same, or gives you more freedom to just experiment with how you want to sound?
Both.
Care to elaborate?
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, I think both. Like, I think it's definitely, like, constricting in a sense of, like, it's harder to display your full picture. But, like, the full picture of the band, the full artistry of the band, it's very hard to depict that in one single when someone just hears a single. But I think at the same time, it's way more accessible to do that, accessible or whatever. So I think that in that light, it is, like, more beneficial to the listener to just have that one single. But at the same time, I do think that a true music fan, a true music listener, wants to hear more than just a single. They want to hear a full album. But it's definitely more convenient just to have that single out there. Like, just for anybody that's wanting to, you know, just hop on board. I don't know, that's kind of always, like, sort of a two-sided coin.
We're about an hour.
We're 45 minutes, which is plenty, because we got the 5-minute intro, 5-minute sign out. If you want
Boone to talk more?
Boone, Boone should talk more. Let's tell us some questions. Stories.
Let's ask him about Hilton Head.
Or
Chick-fil-A.
No, not Hilton Head.
Not Chipotle.
I don't know if I want any of my
How was it turning 21 on tour?
What?
That was me.
That was you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you about my 21st birthday. I laid in bed and watched Netflix.
Probably The Office.
My 21st, we were at Pensacola, and I got wasted.
Yeah.
And, did not really get to enjoy the night just because.
Where were you at?
Drank too much.
Where were you at, though?
Huh?
Where did you find yourself?
I went somewhere that I did not want to necessarily go to, but.
He went to the club.
Yeah.
We went to a strip club on my 21st birthday. And
Ben said,
by the time
take me to the bar and grill.
I know where that is.
No, the Uber driver that brought us to the club.
I thought you were talking about the guy that drove you home. We were like, we're staying at bar and grill.
That was the guy that gave me the free Uber ride because he felt bad for me.
Bo's 21st was great. That was on an off day in Pensacola Beach. We played two shows and we did like one indoor show on a Sunday and we played an outdoor show on a Tuesday, and so his birthday was on that Monday, so it's like right in between.
Yeah, it was.
So it was kind of nice that it fell on an off day.
Yeah, it was good. It was.
His girlfriend flew down.
Yeah, my girlfriend came down, and we all hung out and pre-gamed a little bit, and then went to the bar. And by the time I got to the strip club, I was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So that was not that enjoyable. But I'm glad everybody else had a good time.
I feel like that sounds like a lot of people's strip club experiences.
What, throwing up in a bathroom?
Or just. Spending most of it in the bathroom.
Yeah, it's just more fun.
I honestly like.
I
don't mind strip clubs because I'm not usually attracted to any of the women in there.
I'm not, dude.
I'm not saying that one, but I'm just saying like it's just fun to like people watch and stuff like that. It's just like it's a different environment to be in, a different like sort of culture to be in.
Can 100% confirm. My first time in a casino. People watching in a casino.
Oh, it's amazing. No, yeah. I love going to casinos just to people watch. Like, I don't have enough money to
bet.
But
you
like
also have
do.
To be really careful because, like, the people watching on camera don't think you're people watching.
They think you're, like, counting shit. But, yeah. What I was going to say is, like, I just, like, when I go to a casino, like, we'll go to casinos on tour and stuff. And, like, we played Hard Rock Casino and, like, we did, what was the casino that I actually bet money at? What was the one that was it in Pennsylvania?
That was the one we went to. Was that the dog race one?
The one that I was...
No. I did bet money. We went to a Greyhound races thing once on an off day. We went to a different casino, though. Where was that?
If you were in PA, it was probably Hollywood Casino in Harrisburg.
No.
When there's plenty, but that's like the biggest one in like center Pennsylvania.
Where were we?
I don't know.
We went... Me and Kurt went. It's for Bell, I think.
Definitely. I've gone to Pennsylvania with y'all.
We went
but
to...
But you will soon.
Hold
I'm
on.
Sure.
Yeah, I know.
I'm ready.
No, we went to this casino. Anyway, I just remember, like, yeah, it was great because I just sat at the bar, watched the World Series, and people watched playing people at the casino, you know?
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff do you normally... Are you guys the type that adventure when you guys have off days?
Do adventures?
Yeah, or just explore the area that you're
in. Yeah, I mean,
anymore.
We should try to hit, like, a local music shop.
We got a music store, set up a mall, try to find, like, a cool local restaurant, stuff like that. Just kind of...
Go to the gym.
We like to go all over... We like to find, like, local thrift stores, like... Target and Urban Outfitters. What other? H&M, that's another local thrift shop we've came across. Yeah. Forever 21. Those types of thrift stores.
To see the Urban Outfitters in Charlottesville.
Why is that?
I didn't realize that Urban Outfitters existed outside of malls.
Oh, yeah. No, people love it here because it's the old Charlottesville Hardware
It's a
building.
Really cool building.
Did you guys go in today?
No, we walked past it.
I guess you'll end. It's nice. Yeah, they converted the old hardware building into Urban Outfitters a few years ago. It's really cool. It's just, you know, a little bit beyond my budget. The cheaper thrift stores like H&M for 21. It's more my jam.
Dollar General.
Those sale pants for $10. Dollar General?
Dollar Tree.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any plugs off the top of your head that you're ready to give?
Yeah, like American High, the remix.
The remix, if you want to plug, you can even plug the...
So yeah, there's a thing. Yeah, so there's a song we came out with not too long ago. It's called American High, and we did a video with the wonderful Flat Nickel Management Company, and it was great. But now we're doing a remix for the song. We just want to hit a different demographic. We think it'd be really cool to do a remix in the sense of the
club party type scene that we're not really in. We're in clubs, we're in parties, but we're not like in both like the dance club scene. So I think it would be cool to have something that's playing in dance clubs and that we can like shoot out to different, you know, Miami Beach, South Beach, like all these certain places.
All the beaches.
All the beaches. All the beaches.
Pretty much, actually.
Beaches everywhere, you know. No, so we're getting a guy named Goldhouse. That's not his real name. Not his, you know, born name. But his name is Goldhouse, and he's going to be remixing the song. So it'd be dope. He did stuff with Jude and the Lion. That's how I heard about him. He did remix Take It All Back.
I've heard that.
Yeah, but he did a remix of that. So, and he's done some remixes for some other big artists. I'm pretty sure he's worked with like Diplo and some other big like EDM artists, which is cool. And I like that it's not. Are you gonna say something?
No.
I was gonna say I like how it's not like our necessarily cup of tea. Like, I love electronic music. That's great electronic music, but it's not sort of our cup of tea, like naturally for us. But I think it's cool to put something out that's not necessarily, our own sound. Someone else's take on it. I think that's really cool.
All right, guys, that concludes our interview with the Barons. Of course, be sure to throw us a like on iTunes, on Podomatic, rate us 5 stars, write us a review, do all the things that any other podcast would ask you to do. Follow us on Instagram @FlatNickelPodcast. Peace out and have a great time, and we will see you again next week.